We discuss student voice as an essential condition of personalized learning on episode 3 of iTeach Live on March 26th, 2018. The following is that discussion in its entirety.
As I said earlier in the show, last time we talked essential conditions, we spoke about mastery dispositions. This week, or this month, I guess, we're going to be talking about learner voice.
And how timely is that, given the marches that took place over this past weekend?
Absolutely.
It's as if we planned it.
It's really as if we knew this was happening.
Y'all are making us look like we're geniuses.
How dare you say we're not? So if you, again, have found the white paper, or if you're looking to find the collection of all of these essential conditions and sort of follow along with us as we deep dive into one at a time, you can find that at iteach.kennesaw.edu. The white paper is linked right there. You can also find it at bagwell.kennesaw.edu, and there is a / personalized learning page that all lives on. There's also a great video where you get to see Anissa and I. Maybe you decide we have faces for radio, and that would be rude and a comment that you should keep to yourself. However,
we wouldn't blame you for saying that either.
But we've got some really great video content there that helps to just break apart. It helps to break apart the white paper for you too. So again, we're going to deep dive here into learner voice. And as we start, I think it's important for us to just read out what we sort of define as learner voice.
Absolutely.
In the white paper.
Yeah. So all the listeners know exactly what it is we're talking about.
That's right. So as we define it, in personalized learning, learner voice is integral in planning the path and pace of competency mastery. Learners are not only encouraged, but required to voice their needs, preferences, and interests to plan and drive their education. Explicit training of learners to use their voice in the co-planning and conferencing process may be necessary.
Does that mean that this is not just students stand up in front of the classroom and give a report with their voice?
Right. No, this is not an audio lingual standard. This is really about voice as it pertains to value.
And student agency.
I've found some supporting research out of the UK. There's a Future Lab, National Foundation for Educational Research. And they've got some really great research. Rudd et al. Did some stuff around aspects of learner voice. And so I think that it does sort of complement and add a layer to what we define learner voice as. So it's not just voice, which is about considering perspectives and ideas of the learners, right? That value. But it's also about democracy, learner democracy, and embodying the notion that the experience of learning should be one where all voices are equally important, which is something that I think we are really far away from. In our educational system in this country, learner advocacy is also a part of that. And that means offering the appropriate activities that help learners say what they want, obtain their rights, represent their interests. I think we're seeing that in the news right now. And learner autonomy, which is where it requires the learner's full involvement as a co-planner and a co-author of that learning experience. So there are multiple facets of learner voice, but all of them hinge on this idea of value. We've got to be able to qualify that they're of value
right before
any of these other levels are unlocked, so to speak.
Absolutely. I think it's important to note too, I'm going to interrupt real quick, that intertwined in all this is executive function. I know that I don't want to go into executive function at all, but
we're saving that for when we actually have listeners.
I think that's one of the big things that separates the vision that you guys have put together with a lot of the models that are out there right now, that missing link. Mm-hmm. In that for students to be able to have that autonomy, they've got to have those executive function skills that go along with that. So
that's right.
I just had to throw that in real quick. So
I've seen some discussion about learner voice that takes it from the classroom level to the school level. So students engaging in decision-making associated with the school. Maybe that was the cafeteria and lunch planning, or students participated in the student government organization expanded their services and efforts to the community members in the school and outside. That students aren't only affecting the curriculum and what they're learning in terms of formalized path and pace, but also that hidden curriculum, those other pieces of their schooling experience and how their voice is heard in those places.
Yep, exactly. And I think that's really important to dive a little bit deeper into. I think that we assume sometimes that learner voice is isolated to the academic voice, the one that would be focused on content standards, path and pace, but really it's about all the business of a school, right? Organizationally, what's the master schedule look like? Do you allow for input from your learners in your building when you build that master schedule, or do you just do what you've always done? Meal times, extracurriculars, are they really extra? You know, all of those things.
I heard one principal, well, I didn't hear, but I read online, mm-hmm. and this is an example that may not work for every school, but right. where there was a student panel who would actually hear potential employees.
Yeah.
You know, potential teachers who are in the school interviewing, they would also get to talk with a student panel.
Wow. That's very interesting. So, and on this note, real quick, I shared with our team a video, a YouTube video I found this week on a school called Tallgrass Sudbury School. You guys can Google that and look at it. And they actually are doing this right now. The students are involved in every decision-making process at the school.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from curriculum to the lunch menu. Mm-hmm. So there's a quick little video. You can learn more about it from that school if it's something that...
Well, and isn't it interesting, too, you know, we think about this whole idea of learner voice, and we have all these school governance councils. There's so much local school autonomy now in many of the bigger districts. They've pushed that back. We've got parents and community members sitting on a team of people who are ratifying and rationalizing decisions made at the school, yet students are not still a part of that. The structure is there. The mechanism is there. But why is it that we don't then pull in all stakeholders? Why do we leave out the learner? I think it's just kind of weird.
In the school's defense, it's been, you know, hours in the classroom working on the curriculum. And so sometimes we have to maybe change our perspective that there is value in learning. It's not that we didn't value the student voice, but we didn't value the experience as a learning experience.
That's right. That's a really good point, because I do think you have to have that mastery mindset around what learner voice could be to qualify their experiences and contributions as a part of the learning, that they can provide evidence of mastery of multiple content standards and concepts through these experiences that we would give them to authorize their voice. I just think about how many social studies standards or language arts standards would meet by sitting into a school governance meeting and being able to then debrief their peers and come back to the class and talk about what they participated in.
And debate their position.
That's right.
How they want to persuade their audience.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Really
absolutely.
Good stuff.
So one thing I'm curious about, let's kind of talk about what does learner voice look like now in a traditional classroom versus...
So I have seen it already in classrooms, especially those classrooms that are implementing project-based learning.
Okay, I can see that for sure.
Project-based learning is a great example, and it's a great starting point for teachers who are already doing rich curriculum but want to start incorporating more student voice. And by doing a gold standard, if we want to use Buck Institute's terminology, a gold standard project where learner voice, they're talking about maybe the direction they're going to go with the project or how they're going to approach the topic or the problem at hand.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see a lot of student voice in project-based learning.
I think, you know, and again, this is a version of PBL sometimes and sometimes not, but I think when we're talking about maker-based education, this is exactly where you would find the same thing, where you're talking through a design process and iterative mastery, where kids are picking an idea, formulating a prototype, you know, failing at it, building it again, and not maybe just a physical prototype, but something even in a piece of writing. You know, I think that we're starting to see all the preconditions and the things that are really supportive of learner voice start to crop up more and more in schools. I just think that this is something that requires and really deserves so much intentionality. And right now, I think still we're seeing it by accident, by chance.
Right. Yeah. In an isolated instructional instances rather than as a culture in the classroom or a culture in the school.
So true.
Right. And again, and I think, you know, to stress, this is something that I think a lot of times as a, you know, as a high school teacher, I would think that elementary kids maybe wouldn't excel or be able to do this. But I think it's important that elementary kids at all levels that they have this, because they're not going to be good at it when they get to high school if they haven't had any experience directing.
I've got to tell you, though, that my younger two who are in Montessori education They plan their own field trips, mm-hmm. right? The students plan them. They make the budget. They decide where they're going. They arrange rides. They contact parents to be the rides. Like they coordinate the whole thing. And there's no reason why that can't happen in...
Yeah.
No, I agree. I'm saying it has to happen
in order for them, by the
time they get to me in the ninth grade.
They've got to have experience.
They've not done it before.
It's hard to hold them accountable for something we haven't scaffolded for them, which is the same thing we say for executive function, right? But I think, you know, what's the goal we're after? What is something that we could really tangibly say, this is what an example of learner voice would be at these levels? I think if we look at the elementary school, it's the right time for student-led conferences, for maybe some of the things like you're describing, not just with field trips, but maybe, you know, with lunch menus or with, you know, participating in a student council experience, and we've had those forever, right? But that actually makes decisions about something and see that democratic design and their voice at play. And I think that some people are dabbling in this idea of student-led conferencing. It's certainly the first.
My son led the conference with his dad the other week while I was out of town in Marietta City Schools, student-led conference all the way through.
Yep, and that's something at the elementary level that kids are still really excited about their learning. Mm-hmm. Not that they shouldn't be everywhere else, but we know that that decline happens in middle school where they just stop being excited about the process. We've got to do more to impact that, and I think voice is a way to do that. But at the elementary school, there's no reason why they can't self-report. It's so great as a teacher to have your kids take ownership of that and to give them the authority to talk about where they're at, what they're doing, why they're doing it, and how they're doing.
And what's their best work.
That's right.
What they're excited about.
Mm-hmm. At the middle school, I think there is this sort of gradual release away from student-led conferencing as the only way to do it, and then moving into that co-planning. So rather than just reporting on what has happened, to be a participant in what could and should happen as part of the learning progression. That's a great way to capture learner voice through that co-planning process. I think that also is evident or should be evident at the high school where they're going to co-plan within each content area, but also at the high school level, learner voice can show up in a lot of different ways, like dual enrollment options, open classes, open blocks of time where students can self-navigate through what they might need to experience or to capture. We talk a lot about this big vision of the future where a school feels a little bit like a mall. And even though those are a dying breed, right? Where you have all the stores that you would want to go to.
The mall is, we're going to move our high schools.
Right.
We need extra high schools.
That's
we're going
right.
to take over the mall space. Since that's
right.
all online.
They're all vacant anyway. Yeah. but I think.
I just had visions of Jeff Spicoli and his crew going to
oh
the
my
mall.
Gosh yes well and I just think and every time I think of the mall too,
room to teacher expert
right
room.
I mean, and if I was the kid who got to choose wherever I could go whenever I could go to meet the needs, I would have definitely 85% of the time taken good advantage of it, and then the other 15% of the time, because I hadn't been structured in how to operationalize my voice, have executive function skills, I would have been at wherever the Spencer's Gifts version of school would be, looking at inappropriate cards and finding glow in the dark stuff, you know?
Right.
So I think we've got a long way to go before we can operationalize that vision. But if that's the future, then we need to start preparing kids now for how to authorize themselves in that.
So let's talk about teachers' fears in implementing student voice.
That's a good one, yeah.
Because I think that there are some legitimate concerns and fears that teachers have in turning some decisions over to students.
I agree.
And one of those is probably, can I get the curriculum covered in time?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, and I think as long as teachers continue to put the pressure on themselves as being the deliverer and the pace rabbit of the race of content acquisition, that fear will always be there. We have got to stop creating the mania whereby teachers are the only responsible parties to deliver all knowledge that needs to be received on the timetable prescribed, right? When we let go of that, then we understand that maybe there is room and space for kids to move within content at different ways and at different times. But when I'm trying to, again, check the box of I have spoken it to existence at least once in front of all of these kids in the same way, and I can find it in my plan book, and I can stand firm on the knowing that if no other thing was said, at least they know in 1492 Columbus sailed the ocean blue, right? Whatever the thing is, we've got to release that.
Well, I agree. I agree. But in the meantime, how do we, teachers within their realm of influence and their current experience, what are some micro ways they, ways, not waves, they can start building this in? And I was thinking about this, you know, over the past 2 weeks as we were preparing for this. And I was thinking about that triangle that I've talked about, the intended, taught, and tested curriculum, right?
Yes.
So the intended curriculum is your curriculum standards and your objectives, right? The things you hope that the students will acquire. Well, if we start with just the intended curriculum, you know, especially if we look at science and social studies curriculum, it doesn't necessarily have to go in any particular order.
That's right.
We can start by giving the children the list of units that we're going to have this year in those topics and let them choose the order in which they gain those.
I love that. And sort of a hold harmless content area where we're not necessarily time bound to a specific, you know.
Right. So it's
standard
a simple way.
Yeah.
He or she probably, as a teacher, already has all those instructional materials from the year before prepped and ready to go. So why not let the students choose the order that they get those? That would be one way to have student voice.
I love that.
Then if we look at another piece of the triangle, let's say we look at the taught curriculum. Okay, so you don't have to necessarily tell the students, have them choose the order, but maybe you're comfortable now with saying, listen, this is our objective. This is our critical question or our guiding question. How are we going to show that we know this information within a week? Like, what do you think we should do? What's your plan? Now, that's taking it another step, okay? But that is still controlling the topic at hand or the particular curriculum standards that are being addressed, but gives us safety within boundaries.
Sure.
And so those were my two ideas. Of course, we could also apply that to the tested curriculum if it's not an area that's being tested by a standardized test.
Right.
But once again, that authentic assessment, if we ask students, you know, what can you produce that shows that you have mastered this particular concept?
Right. And here in the state of Georgia, we do have a bill proposed right now.
Yes.
Where we could potentially see this, you know, we've talked a lot about this platform 9 3/4 where people run through the wall, but then they get some exceptionalities that come with that.
Innovation and testing.
Right. Innovation and assessment, and where people would come by their own accountability plan and maybe not be bound to whatever the state assessment is. So I'll be curious in following that. I can't remember the number of the state bill, but I'm sure that if you Googled it, you would find it. And that's running through right now at the state level. So.
Yes. So, so would you say that that's a movement in the right direction?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, we've talked a little bit too internally about the idea of how do we make the assessment that we do have more adaptive and authentic.
Mm-hmm.
I think first steps are taking the existing milestones, making it machine readable and allowing it to be adaptive so that everybody enters at the same point and goes as far as they can go. And we might do that multiple times, allow for students to authorize their voice to say, hey, I'm ready to dive into this and see where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
More of a diagnostic and a continuum than a point in time at one point in the year.
Right.
So I think we're on our way there.
That would certainly prepare us to at least measure students based on growth.
Agreed.
So where they fell on that continuum at the beginning of the year versus where they fell on that continuum of learning at the end of the year.
Right.
And
really it's about competency then and not proficiency, which is a different metric. And I think I want to say that again, because I don't think teachers, I didn't at least in the classroom, recognize the difference between the two and spend time learning more about it. But the difference between growth and competency and a level of proficiency against, you know, a metric that's across the board
at a certain date and time.
That's right.
Every 7-year-old on this day is going to know about this particular fact.
Yes. And I think, too, it's just so interesting. You know, this is a little bit of a sidebar, but follow me for a second. I had come back from my time in Spain presenting at a conference to a very sick little one. My 9-year-old had strep, but we didn't know it. We ended up in the ER. And one of the first questions they asked was she full term? Okay. And at first it was sort of weird that they would ask that question of a 9-year-old presenting with a high fever and vomiting. But then it sort of sat with me a little bit. And if it still matters so much 9 years later, the weeks of gestation for my child and how that planned her medical path forward at that point in time, why do we still not factor any of those other externals in when we say, oh, third grader doesn't matter, any of that other stuff. You know what I mean? It just was one of those like aha moments that it matters so much just how long she cooked, how they treat her at the ER, but it doesn't matter at all, any of that, when we talk about
learning.
Right, learning and this level of, quote, proficiency. So just interesting, but I think that the other thing we need to talk about as far as like the teachers and what they can kind of do, there's something that I would just call out all leaders to do right now. And that would be to give permission and encouragement, because without that from the people who are the level set against the teacher evaluation system, much of this will stop before it starts, because they are, even if they feel like it's the right work to do, teachers are fearful of doing that work without permission and encouragement from the people who are.
So how could a leader walk into a teacher's classroom and give her or him permission and encouragement to start incorporating student voice?
Yeah, I think the greatest first step would be to say, let's do an experiment, right? Let's do I don't like the term pilot necessarily, but let's just get weird, right? Let me give you a 4-week period of time, and I would love to see what it would look like if you allowed X to be in the hands of your students. Maybe it's the way at which they demonstrate mastery. Maybe it's the order in which they access the content through whatever that unit is. Maybe it's whatever. And just give them a micro goal, but in the form of an encouragement and a praise, right?
I think also just celebrating the try.
That's it. Yes.
Right.
And so, not like the kids did wonderful stuff because they had all this, but just this teacher had a great amount of, you know, she basically overcame a huge amount of fear. Right. All teachers are fearful of doing something that their peers are not doing. It's just most teachers are fearful of stepping out away from the pack and doing something that draws more attention to them.
Sure.
If they're unsure about how it's going to be viewed. So just acknowledging, hey, you were bold enough to take this step.
Yep.
You collected good information, whether it was successful or not.
I think also a leader can reassure the teacher that, hey, even if this crashes and burns, I'm here for you. And I value your willingness to be an entrepreneur and try something different.
So I would just like to say, it is tough to get a word in with you two in these discussions. Y'all are...
Because we're so passionate.
They are. I wish y'all could see them. They are staring at each other. They're having they are having this in-depth conversation, and little do they know, Andy is here as well.
Andy.
But that's all right. I'll butt in.
You're the wind beneath our wings. Don't
I just wanted to remind everybody, you're listening to KSU to I Teach Live here on KSU All Radio with Andy, Stephanie, and Anissa, and we are taking a deep dive right now at the personalized learning essential condition of learner voice.
Well, and Andy, I will challenge you to interject, because you've spoken a lot about this as it pertains to your own kids.
I know, I do. It's hard when it's your own kids at hand, and you've been asking their principals to listen. So that's
as a parent, if you knew that the teacher in your son's classroom was going to just get weird for a month,
yes,
and it's possible that his standardized test score might be a little bit lower than it otherwise would be,
right?
What's your response to that?
So my response is that I'm all right with a lower standardized test score. That doesn't bother me. But B, I think what I say to teachers often when I talk about learner voice and letting kids have more say in what they're doing in the classroom is that I think you'll be amazed at what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
I think so many times we don't give our learners credit, just like people didn't give these Parkland students credit for what they could do. And, you know, there were hundreds of thousands of people this weekend in Washington, D.C.
And across the nation.
Yeah, across the nation participating in this, you know, in this student-led, speaking out, if you will.
Protest.
I don't know if I want to use the word protest.
Oh, okay.
Maybe whatever you want to call it.
Demonstration,
whatever. But I think that's what I try to, the point that I try to emphasize to teachers the most is I don't think we give our students enough credit for A, what they're interested in, and B, what they can do when they are interested in a topic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I talk to my son's teachers about a lot is if we let them choose, I think you'll be amazed at what you're going to get. And it's, you know, I just had a very interesting email exchange with my sons, with an eighth grade teacher. And my oldest son is not big into reading. And at his school, they've separated reading and language arts so that every student has both reading and language arts. Mm-hmm. And it's just not his forte. You know, he's a 13-year-old boy. He likes to play soccer. And he doesn't necessarily, he's not a great sitting still reader. And I got an email back about, oh my gosh, your son gave these great in-depth written responses about a reading, and you know, he did it at home online. When he's in class, a lot of times he gives me these short one sentence, short phrase kind of responses, like, I need you to encourage him to do more, you know, at the end of the year, especially on milestones and blah, 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 blah. So, you know, his mother and I talked to him and we said, yo, AB, what gives? What was the difference? And you know what the difference was? He enjoyed the reading.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's the difference. When he, and you know, I guess in full disclosure, he didn't choose this particular reading. This is not an example of voice, but it was something he enjoyed. And I think if we gave them the opportunity,
of course,
to read what he wanted to read, I think he would give back in depth. And he asked his mom to like put things away one day and asked her to read the story so that they could have a discussion about the story. And that, to me, for a kid who's been struggling, you know, I have to stay on him about reading, you know, all it took was something that he enjoyed.
Right.
Right. He's engaged. And now all of a sudden he wants his mom to stop what she's doing so that they can have a conversation about this story that he really enjoyed. And he gave great feedback to the teacher.
It wasn't Beowulf, was it?
It was not Beowulf.
Yeah.
It was not Beowulf. I don't know. You had to ask me what it was. I don't know.
Plato's allegory. It was Plato's allegory.
but let's also balance this a little bit, because sometimes there's a book that your child will not read but would really benefit them. Okay?
That's right. Not everything in life as a learner or as an individual is based on just your choice and voice.
Right.
Right.
So there's a little bit of balance.
There is.
In that.
There is.
My son, when he was younger, didn't necessarily want to read a particular book about the Browns moving to Birmingham. And it was about, and I don't remember the exact title. Does anybody remember the title? And it's about the church bombings in the 1960s during the...
Was there a movie adaptation?
Civil rights. Yeah, I think there was.
Okay, someone will tweet us and tell us the name
tweet
of
us out
that
the day,
book.
Yeah.
It's a great book for a third grade, you know, reading level.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't really want to read it, so I started reading it to him, and then he started reading it and didn't want to stop. And by the end, he had learned a lot about some other people's experiences, life experiences. I won't say on public whether or not he cried about the book.
No,
but it's
of course,
not,
that would be very
would be
socially
so
damning
mom.
To your son.
These meaningful experiences also still need to happen that stretch them beyond their comfort zone. So we've got to find some balance. It's not that everything is student voice. This is where the co-planning piece comes in, and it's important that you have this adult guide also helping the learner to make some other choices and to stretch themselves.
That's so true. We've got some action here on Twitter.
Oh, my gosh. I was just about to say, let me stop. Mrs. Jackson. I'm sorry, Miss Jackson.
You are for real.
Let me get my Dirty South going on here. Mrs. Jackson's listening. She says, don't worry. You've got listeners, and there are so many who need to be listening.
And she remembers the name of the book.
Is the pathway to innovation. Does she got the book?
Watsons Go to Birmingham.
That's it.
I thought it was the Brown family, but it was the Watsons.
To Birmingham. Mrs. Jackson, I need you to send me a direct message, please, because I want to send you a shirt. So I am at I Teach EdTech to You.
Miss Jackson is ours.
Send me your info. Who is that?
She's ours. Okay, she's ours. I teach.
Come on.
We're still trying to build our listenership.
She still gets a shirt.
It's not artificially.
Right. No, but you know what? Here's the thing.
I'll make it happen.
I want to just say this too. This is so great. This is happening right now because our team is so big, and the reach is so wide. I just think that it's so great that we've got this big pot of people who have taught at every grade level and can empathize with us. And so this is a shameless, humble brag and plug, but I Teach represents all of these teachers at different levels who have taught traditionally and then made the cognitive switch to do something differently and authorize and implore people to level their voice as learners. And so, as you're seeing this action on Twitter, don't forget that these people are people who are out coaching and trying to encourage other teachers to do it. And that's the way to make it happen. Right.
Right.
All right. So here's the last thing that we wanted to talk about as far as learner voice is sort of concerned. And it's about how do we manage and assess. And we talked a little bit about the, you know, the connection between assessment and mastery dispositions as it relates to learner voice, because if we can't qualify what kids are doing based on what they want to do or what they've voiced they want to do or their path forward, if we can't qualify that as learning, you know, to that point, then we're sort of at an impasse. So again, I think we just need to stop assessing information against a prescribed checklist of regurgitated facts as the first thing. But then we also need to assess against against a rigorous expectation of content mastery rather than what it looks like in the format. A lot of people say learner voice is just about product, and I think that's a good safe place to start, right? Instead of everybody turning in the same trifold poster board, give kids the opportunity. That my own child is one who's working, you know, right now third graders are learning about habitats in the regions of Georgia, and so she created this diorama, and you know, with me as a mom, of course I said to her, hey, let's make a virtual field trip instead of this diorama, or let's do a thing link, or we're going to link out. But she was like, Ma, just can I have some styrofoam and some paint? So for her, you know, her voice was, I want to do this the way I want to do this. And that's the traditional air quotes way of, you know, puffy paint and glitter glue and a clay alligator cruising down the swamp of the Okefenokee. So, I think that we need to just start from an easy place where assessment can look differently based on what the students themselves voice they want to subscribe to.
Wouldn't it be beautiful if one day the student portfolio and list of skills, maybe it would be on a blockchain technology or something of that sort, where that means more than the transcript itself, that just has a course name and a grade level and a test score to go with it. You know, if colleges and employers can log into a student portfolio and see a list of the skills that they've been able to demonstrate in their school. So if that's to start a national march on a Saturday about student concerns about a particular topic, then why shouldn't they get credit for that particular skill set and have evidence, be able to link to evidence of that? And then As a professor, if I'm looking at admitting a student, it means so much more to me to be able to dive in there and see really what the student is doing and the artifacts of what they've been
and
showing.
I think for people who are fearful of the pendulum swinging all the way that direction, I think right now it's a yes and. It's not a but, right? So it's not that we have to throw the baby out with the bathwater and get rid of the traditional transcript of qualified learning right now. But what we need to do is say yes and I can qualify that this other experience that you have is also supportive of this set of standards that we've got, right? So
I think it's super interesting that we're talking about this. I happen to be married to a high school counselor, and so many colleges they look at the transcript, but what the counselors are stressing to students today to differentiate themselves is all the extra.
Right.
What are you passionate about? Where are you spending your time, and what are you doing in your spare time? And those are the differentiating factors for a lot of kids to get into schools these days, not just
students,
your GPA,
who are using their voice.
Absolutely. But what are you doing in your spare time? And you know, are you building rockets that are shooting videos up into space and filming them down?
And truthfully, you know, if we're thinking 10, 15, 20 years down the line, when we're all rocking a standards mastery framework, and it's about have you mastered or not mastered content, GPAs and class rank look a lot differently when it's mastery versus non-mastery.
Well, everyone has an A.
That's right. And so what sets you apart are these things that you leverage your voice to do, that you make choices about opportunities that you have. So I don't want people to lose sight of the fact that...
And your portfolio of work.
Yes,
right?
That's it.
That's what's
how
important.
Far you went in an area of interest.
And a deep dive that you took.
Absolutely.
Yes, that's it. So I think that that's the future of what a competitive scholar looks like at the higher education level.
Well, a student who really decided to study those rockets, and build those rockets, they may meet mastery that looks very similar to other classmates in terms of reading and language arts, but they went really deep into rocketry and mathematics and physics. Well, they would be competitive in a school that addresses rocketry and mathematics.
Right.
But they would not be so competitive in a school that focuses on writing and literature.
Right? Yeah. So, and I use that example because my wife showed that video to a student who was wanting to apply to Georgia Tech. And these were high school seniors mm-hmm. who made this video, and they, too, applying to Georgia Tech. And so she said, here's your competition. What are you doing to stand out to Georgia Tech? Because you got the grades. You got the grades. If you're thinking about Tech, I'm going to assume you got the grades. What else are you doing? Tech wants to know, what else are you doing? What are you doing in your spare time? What are you passionate about? What are you building, you know, on your own?
Yes.
And that's, you know, yes. If you're not out there making and building and doing and, you know, voicing, you know, you might get looked over by some kids maybe whose grades maybe aren't quite as good.
Well, and right now the traditional system does not support necessarily building student voice and their confidence in that.
And I think, too, confidence in voice comes from acceptance. And that's a dangerous game, too, for kids. You know, there is a lot of social norming that has taken place to make kids feel like if their opinion differs from somebody else's, that they should just keep it to themselves.
But that said, I think that that's historically a greater problem than what we're moving towards.
I agree with you. Yeah.
I think that society in general, we see that we are more accepting of our uniqueness and the intersectionality of our identities. And just by us being able to say, describe ourselves in a variety of ways and not just using the word normal.
Right.
That being unique mm-hmm. is the new normal.
Right. I agree.
Yeah. I think we burned that word normal in the last episode, didn't we?
It certainly doesn't apply to me, but.
Did we talk about this on the show about the airplane pilot seat?
I think we did. In the new normal? Was it? Is that
I
the
think
book?
We did. Well, no, it's the end of average.
The end of average, not the new
yes.
normal.
At some point, right? That nobody is average.
There is no a myth is of no average. Right? That's a fake thing that we've made up to try to help ourselves in the process to create things that fit multiple solutions, but that's just not it. That's not what we're after.
And student voice plays into that.
Sure.
That if students let go of this belief that normal is a thing, mm-hmm. is a real obtainable thing, then their unique voices are more, I think it's easier for them to accept their own uniqueness as well as each other's.
Oh my gosh. And how does this tie into social emotional learning and how, mm-hmm. you know, our need for that right now in schools
Absolutely.
And acceptance and
to feel heard.
Absolutely.
To feel seen.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, man, we could keep going, but we're going to have to transition. I know.
Yeah.
Andy,
yeah.
are you
We're getting
okay?
ready here. We've got the big guy in the bow tie. He is live in the studio. So I'm going to play a commercial real quick. We're going to get David in the chair, get him ready to go, and then we're going to get started with a new segment that we're calling Gadget Time with the big guy in the bow tie. So you're listening to I Teach Live on KSUL Radio with Andy, Stephanie, and Anissa, and we will be right back.
Have you ever tried to get a group of students to read for an hour straight, even 10 minutes straight? Just sit there and read? It's almost impossible. Now you can. That's what Read Ahead does. Let students share and compare how they read with each other instead of taking multiple choice tests.
You can be a part of our next big breakthrough. Help us understand how reading analytics and machine learning with our Smart Skimmer can transform reading assessment and professional development, or how open models for reading instruction and assessment can transform education. Learn more on the web at readahead.education. Everything is
to bring it as a surprise.
Yeah. All right. Welcome back, everybody.
And
so
we're back.
I'm really excited about this segment because this is where all of our friends can let their nerd flag fly a little bit. All of us who work in the field of instructional technology, specifically those of us who focus on personalized learning, sometimes we feel like we have to separate ourselves from the gadget and the tool and the thing because we say all the time it's not about that. But it is kind of about that. that because
sometimes
technology can be a great support and driver for what's possible. You know, we talked about SAMR earlier.
Absolutely.
We can't get to redefinition without some of the technology tools that are out there to create new opportunities.
That's exactly right.
And we have our own in-house resident techspert, big guy in a bow tie, David Lockhart, who's one of our folks here at iTeach. So, hey, David, how are you?
Hello.
Yay.
All right, David. Can everybody hear? Is his mic on?
His mic is on.
I believe so.
All right.
Yes. All right. So,
my mic's actually on. They're not scared to have my mic
on. No, your mic's on, but just remember we're live. This is a live show.
You got to keep it busy.
Yeah, this is the segment that Steph's going to sweating the most.
Right. I know.
We try to keep it mostly professional here.
Right.
Mostly professional.
Right. So, David, you've got some good stuff to share with us today. So, we're just going to turn it over to you and let you share for gadget time.
All right. So, gadget time today is actually something that I saw a couple of years ago. I heard of it a couple of years ago. I haven't really dived into it till recently. And I had somebody who reached out to me and said, I want to send you a kit. And I want to send you a kit of this and you see what you think and kind of go from there. And I've gotten to a point where I really like it. And what it is called Hyperduino. And Hyperduino is a kit that this guy named Roger Wagner went and took an Arduino board, which is a circuit board that you can build a computer and code and do all kinds of crazy stuff. And he simplified it for students. And he simplified it a little bit where students can go and make interactive projects with it. Very simply, it's a little board that you get. It's about the kit overall is about $100. And that you can go and you can connect LEDs to it. You can connect little buttons to it where every time you hit a button, the LED kicks on. So there's lots and lots of things that you could do with that. Like one of the things that he advocates for is the kind of old poster boards or dioramas or those types of things that were just talked about of adding that LED and interactivity to it. I think you could build creatures out of like just craft supplies and robots out of craft supplies and add that kind of thing to it. But it also allows you to add buttons where you can kick on YouTube videos on a computer. You can go and add sensors to it. There's a lot of things that you can do with it. And one of the reasons I like it a lot is because to me, one of the things when you look at maker tools is how high is the ceiling? And I think the ceiling with this is pretty high because you can do so much with it. But it's also the learning, kind of figuring out how to do it is not super high. So you see elementary school kids do it. And so there's a lot that it's open and accessible to a lot of folks.
That's awesome. And I think, too, did you mention price point on this?
I did. Kit is a little under $100.
Right. So maybe more than what I would want an individual teacher to spend. But certainly if you had a PTA grant or something like that, it's within range for people to grab a hold of and something that you can use across multiple students.
And absolutely, and it's built off something that can lead into other things because it's basically a shield that goes on top of an Arduino board. So you're leading into Arduino and leading into kind of that higher level stuff.
Yep. And I want to just reiterate too, here in the state of Georgia, we now next year have computer science standards across every grade level.
Right.
So K-12 will have those CS standards, and this would be a really great tool to help try to get kids started on implementation of some of the computer science standards that we're going to see.
And I would love to come out and help people with computer science stuff.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, this would look great in a media center, an innovation lab.
Makerspace,
whatever you've got.
Yeah,
I'm looking at the website here. It's pretty cool. They've got this old school, looks like a volcano that a student built, like the diorama.
Yeah.
Right, Juju, or if you're listening. And then they've got all kinds of lights and LEDs and things built into this. So it's really this combination of old school, traditional hands-on, let me make it, and then I'm going to intertwine and wrap in it some new
I mean, think about the standards
skills
for electrical circuits and for all kinds of coding. And, you know, that's where you start to see the collapse of multiple standards.
And I think the key here is that it's that kind of teaching level and learning level. It looks like it's really hard, but it's not, because it's basically just connecting things and following just a short tutorial, and that teachers can do it, young kids can do it. There's a lot that you can do with it.
So, David, let me ask you, what are some of the tools or some of the things that a Hyperduino or an Arduino board will work with? So if I have a child, a student who wants to program or code with one of these boards? What are some of the tools or some of the resources they can use?
That's actually a good thing that I missed, is the Hyperduino kit, the way that it works right now, although as Google redoes Chrome apps, we'll have to see where that goes after that.
Yeah.
But the way it works right now is it's actually a Chrome app, which means it's pretty device agnostic. You're not going to go to, I mean, it's not going to go and work with mobile devices, but Macs, Chromebooks, especially with the Chromebooks, that's a good thing. And Windows laptops, it works with all of them.
Yeah, it is sometimes sort of hard when we've got a lot of schools that have gone with a Chromebook, right? But they're not the most robust device. And so when you think about other coding situations, this might be a really nice solution for that, right?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how, and it's, you're starting to see some of the companies adjust to the Chromebook.
Sure.
And it'll be interesting to see how it goes. But yeah, it's a solution that even with old beat up Windows computers that you don't know what else you can use, you can play, if you can download Chrome to it, you can plug this sucker in and go.
Yep. All right, David. So here's a great opportunity for people to come out and talk to you and maybe see a little bit more about the Hyperduino and other stuff that we do. David,
we might actually be giving one away at this just as a...
Okay, so you guys may have heard me talk a little bit, tease a little bit about the MakerBus launch. So iTeach is launching a mobile maker space, 33-foot bus. We've got everything from puffy paint to green screen to laser cutter on board, right? So this is going to be a solution that goes out to schools and districts, anywhere that the bus can drive. And we are going to be doing a launch unveiling here on KSU, Kennesaw State University's campus, on April 25th. It's a Wednesday from 11 to 1. And all are welcome, open to the public. Just cruise on in. Park yourself, walk over. You're going to see the bus. It's going to be parked in between the Convocation Center and Kennesaw Hall. And we've got some really great giveaways for folks who show up. The Hyperduino board is going to be, or the kit is going to be maybe one of those things.
Yes.
And we've also got some stuff from other folks that we're going to hold a little tight to chest because they're really exciting things and we don't want to have a mob scene on our hands. So if you have nothing going on
or
Wednesday,
even if you
the
do,
25th, cancel it.
Clear your calendar.
Right. Come on
tell
out.
Tell them Andy said.
Right. I'll write you a note and excuse your absence. But yeah, I think the Maker Bus launch is going to be a great opportunity. A lot of our coaches are going to have booths set up where they're going to talk a little bit about some of the Maker activities. And again, Maker's not synonymous with high tech, right? We've got no tech, low tech, high tech options for what making can look like. And it's not synonymous with STEM or STEAM either. It's
absolutely
all content areas. So
absolutely,
come on out, check it out. And David, before we let you off the hook, I am really curious if you would give us maybe, I saw you just posted a blog post about this also. Apple has a big announcement coming this week. They've sort of been hinting and teasing it. They've got some stuff going on in the EDU forum. So any thoughts about what Apple might be unveiling this week?
So I think when you look at what Apple's going to unveil, Apple as a whole is getting their clock cleaned by Google and Chromebook right now. And
sure,
so you look at it and you say, okay, what will they do? I think it's going to be, number one, you're going to see new iPads at the event. I think it's pretty much a guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
A year or so ago, they released a lower cost version, which would be decent for schools. But if you've ever been with kids and iPads, one of the biggest issues is with a keyboard. So when
sure,
they release the low cost version, everybody who's in EDU is going, where's the keyboard connector from that's on the pros? Because that's like an easy low-hanging fruit to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you'll at least see iPads with the keyboards. I think it's an open question what they do with the stylus right now and the Apple Pencil. I think that you may see something, you may not, because the invitation actually hints at that. But obviously when you go with a pencil and kids, the worry about them losing it is
a
big thing.
Tons of financial
implications.
Tiny little charger adapter.
Well, right?
But they're also looking at Chromebooks that are the new EDU Chromebooks that all come with styluses.
Right.
So
yeah,
who knows?
I think we're going to see stylus support, but they've got to also, in my opinion, they got to show a cheaper pencil.
Well, they've got to anonymize
that. Pencil's $100, and that's not...
it's just not feasible.
It's got little, like, the cap on the end that is a pain to deal with. And so if they do, it's going to be a simpler version.
You know what? I see an untapped resource here. Crokies, if you guys hear me right now, you know the people that all the frat-tastics wear with their sunglasses to hold them on the back of their necks. You know what I'm talking about. the little like lanyard looking thing that's not a lanyard and it's cooler than that. Crokey's needs to come up with like a Apple stylus pencil holder.
Cooler than a lanyard for your sunglasses?
Wear your Apple pencil around.
Don't judge it, Annie. For people like me who have to wear sunglasses.
Those things that are made out of the same stuff. Like beer koozies?
Yes, like the foamy stuff.
When you're done, do you take it off and put it in your fanny pack?
You know what? It's an adventure sack. Don't judge.
Fanny packs are back in.
No, they're
not. They've been walking the runways.
No.
It's more of a panis pouch, though. Like, it doesn't really go on your fanny. It's more of like a panis pouch on the front of you.
Julie Warner. My friend Julie Warner is up in D.C., and she was down in Savannah with some friends this weekend. I saw her on Instagram. She posted a picture, and she said in the picture, what you don't see are matching fanny packs. This girl's
BFF
weekend.
Packs.
And, yeah. Well, I said, there's no picture, it didn't happen.
Right.
So, I don't believe it. So
Julie, we just need to give kids a fanny pack to carry around all their ancillary equipment for their devices these days. Telling you. So anything that you think might be coming as far as like an EDU programmatic support?
So I think as far as kind of software programmatic, my guess is you see a iPad version of the iBooks Author. Mm-hmm. I think that's a low hanging fruit for them to do.
Sure.
Where kids can go and actually build their own books and publish their own books to the iBooks store. I think you'll see something around iTunes U. I don't know what it is because they look at Classroom and they say, okay, Classroom's simple. And that's one of the reasons schools are adopting Google stuff, and you may see something there. And then their big push a lot is also into coding. And so I don't know where they go past the Swift coding app. I can't, but I think you definitely will see
something there,
something around Swift coding. And I don't know what it looks like. Maybe to a point that if they could simplify the app process where kids could actually build their own apps a little bit better or do that in the app, that could be interesting. But I think that that's kind of where they'll go.
Yeah.
I think they still are going to lag behind until they can go to schools with an email server that's equal to Microsoft and Google, because a lot of times that's where that starts.
That integration,
That integration, and the reason that schools adapt Microsoft or Google or both is starts with email, because they need an email system. And then I think they need a really big update of iWork, but I don't know that you'll see that either.
And oh my gosh, the work that it takes to actually use Apple's Classroom product, the back end.
And that's
such a nightmare.
That's another one too, but I don't know. I think you may see some updated features, but I don't know that you'll see something.
It's going to get a
bigger
hairstyle
scale where it could be like at the district level that managing iPads, which is always the issue with them.
So here's the last thing I want to kind of pick your gadget brain about, David. Those of you who have heard, Toys R Us is in bankruptcy. It is now court owned, not privately held or publicly held. And they are liquidating all of their stores across the U.S. And so I went the other day with a specific intention of restocking some of the things that we use in our maker space and with our maker camp. Anything that you can think of that's a must look for maybe some gadget parents or gadget teachers that are out there, what's something they might be able to find on discount before there's a melee on the entire store?
So when you look at those gadgets, there may be a melee already for some of those. I mean, things like Osmos, I think, are great for younger kids. I think that there's all sorts of robotics and stuff they have there, but to me, those are going to be the things that are discounted last and are maybe go first. I think if you're really looking for STEM and maker and that type of thing, there's all kinds of good creation and maker, like little kits that kids can do.
Like the Meccano kits I saw while I was over there the other day.
Even Legos.
Oh, yeah.
Even Legos. Kids love Legos. And this is, you know, I read where this is going to be a huge hurt on Lego, because I think that this is where they sell the majority of their product, is through Toys R Us. But I you know, if I was out there, and I may make a run by the store.
I think I'm going to run by the store after today.
Yeah, I would be making a run on those giant Lego kits.
Yeah, but you know, when I went last week on Friday when the liquidation sale started, most of everything was only 5 to 10% off at that point. And so truthfully, if you stack the prices of Toys R Us against an Amazon or a Walmart, you were still not getting maybe the best deals out there on most.
And so I think where you might find a really good deal is those kind of STEM kits that are usually back near the books that a lot of parents don't really know what they are. And because those are going to be the things that don't, the brand names like Lego and that stuff's going to be the stuff that goes first. Those may be the stuff that's there as the liquidation gets further and further down.
Well, that's great information. And So hit us up, iTeachLive, hashtag iTeachLive, if gadget time was something that you want to hear more about. It's certainly something that we can, you know, continue to do. I think it's important to just satiate the appetite of people who are in the instructional tech world and want a little bit more of that as we talk about some of the pedagogically heavy stuff that we've talked about
absolutely.
On the show as well.
That's good. I didn't wear out my welcome already.
No. And you didn't mess up and cuss on the radio, so we'll have you back. All right, guys. So we are wrapping down the show here today. I want to just reiterate our word of the day, and if you can use it, you should use it. Bumfuzzle. Anybody who works with kids or does anything really in education knows that being confused, perplexed, or flustered, or causing confusion in a situation is something that happens almost hour by hour, minute by minute. So just shout us out, hashtag iTeachLive. What was the bumfuzzle that happened in your world today? And we'll continue to use that word throughout the day. Also, to reiterate, the essential conditions, the white paper, are available at iteach.kennesaw.edu, right on the main page, as is more information about maker camps that are available through iTeach this summer on campus.
Yeah, we just published those dates last week. Mm-hmm. I think I did that.
Yep.
So, and registration to our doctorate program.
Yep.
The application deadline is coming up here in the first week of April, I believe.
Yes, and all of us will be white-knuckling it together as I have decided to throw my hat in the ring for the EDD program here. So get your applications in. I'm not going to say that I want you to win more than I want me to win, because it's a competitive process, but I'll cheer you on quietly in the background. And we just so appreciate the time that you all spent with us this morning. Give us some feedback. What are the topics you want to hear more about? Have you read an awesome book that we need to ping the author to come on in and do another conversation like we had with Anthony, which... Shout out to Anthony Kim for being our safe enough to try first call-in guest. I think all told, we did a pretty good job with it today, guys.
Absolutely. Or if you are an author who wants to come talk
to us. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Or if you're a school leader and you're doing some innovative things in your building or in your district,
we
want to talk to you. If you're a teacher that's doing some really cool things, hey, we want to talk to you. Give me a call. Come out. We'll make a video. We'll see what's happening.
Yes.
You know, we want to share what you're doing, the success stories, the trials, the tribulations.
Yes.
You know, to move personalized learning forward here in Atlanta and Georgia and the Southeast and the nation and the world.
So let me end with this. Here's a little bit of a locker room pep talk for the rest of your day.
Yes,
get your tissues out, Andy. Listen, we are here because you are here, and we are all here supporting the good work that's happening in classrooms all over the nation, all over the world every day. Our topic for today was learner voice. So I would just challenge everybody who's listening that has learners that are in their scope of influence, give them the opportunity to use their voice today, not just academically, but just in a way that validates that they are an equal part of the democracy of learning in our schools and in our districts. And if you need support, you are learners as well. All of us are in education, continually, lifelong. We are here to support you. So we want to give you a voice. Use that voice. Hit us up on Twitter and keep fighting the good fight every day. We're doing amazing things. We're seeing amazing things. And we're really proud to be a part of everybody's story who tunes into the radio show.
iTeach Live is produced by the instructional technology coaches from iTeach at Kennesaw State University, with the cooperation of the Instructional Technology Department, the Bagwell College of Education, and KSU Owl Radio. You can reach out to them for more information, questions, or comments at their website, iteach.kennesaw.edu, or on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at KSU iTeach.